In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
I'd like to read you a little something and see if you can guess where it's from. The topic is about private property and whether or not you should be allowed to have it. Quote, "As far as this goes, the whole concept of nationalization in the form in which it has been attempted and demanded so far appears to me to be wrong, and I have come to the conclusion that we have to bring a process of selection into the matter in some way if we want to come to a natural, healthy, and also satisfying solution of the problem, a process of selection for those who should be entitled and be at all permitted to have a claim to and the right to property and to ownership of companies." Let me pause there. In other words, we, the state, will decide who gets to own property, who is permitted to acquire wealth or be allowed to own companies. Only the right people will be allowed to do so. And although they don't say it there, it's about allowing only people who support the government and their political ideology. Those will be the ones allowed to prosper. Let me continue. Quote, "Therefore, wealth in particular does not only have greater possibilities for enjoyment, but above all, greater obligations. The view that the utilization of a fortune, no matter what size, is solely the private affair of the individual requires to be corrected, because without the contribution of the community, no individual would have been able to enjoy such an advantage." In other words, you didn't get rich on your own. You didn't build that. You would not have gotten rich unless other people bought the things you made and sold and sweated over, and that somehow entitles other people a claim on your money. And certainly, the government should have a say. The individual has no individual rights. So any guesses? If you're thinking that was from a recent modern-day Democrat rally or from Kamala or one of her minions, you wouldn't be too far off. It certainly sounds like things that they would say and an ideology that they would definitely hold, in fact, do hold. Worse, it's an ideology they are demanding you hold. Despite that sounding like today's Democrats, that was actually Adolf Hitler. You know, the guy that the Democrats accuse everybody else of being. We have already seen this ideology in play by Democrats who steer hundreds of billions of dollars to their ideology, money that was stolen from the U.S. taxpayer to fund the new Green Deal to make sure the right people and the right companies get the money to push their agenda. And by right people, I mean people on the far left. On today's show, as we near the finish line of the election, we're focusing on the economy and who will be put in charge of that economy for the next 4 years. Trump, who took the sluggish economy Obama had handed him and made it roar to improve the lives of everybody. Or will it be Kamala, somebody who wants to double down on control and, much like Hitler, decide who is allowed to be wealthy? When it comes to the economy, there are a lot of different elements: the stock market and investments, supply chains, means of production, retail, labor, and of course, how much people and businesses are buying and selling. But the one thing they all have in common is that they all need energy and use energy. Today, we're looking at the energy component of the economy, and I'd like to welcome back Frank Lassay to the show. Frank is the president of Truth in Energy and Climate and a senior policy analyst for CFACT. Frank, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. These are really, really important topics, and we tend to take energy for granted until we are confronted with not enough energy.
Yes, or really high utility bills.
People are seeing that more and more and more, and we're going to continue to see that. And if we look to Europe, where they're ahead of us on adding wind and solar to their electric grids, Denmark, Germany, and the United Kingdom all have, their citizens pay triple the electric rates that the average American does.
Which is weird, because I've said this before on the show, is that when we were first approached by our own power company, they said, well, would you like to help support these green energy initiatives with solar and wind? And at the time, I remember thinking, and this is before I knew hardly anything about global warming or any of the other things, I remember thinking that, gosh, you know, it's a free energy source, so this should drive all of our utility bills down, and yet they've gone up tremendously.
Well, building, you know, when they're operating, they just take the sun and the wind, but building them and running them have costs. And that's one of those big lies. And I cover it in my book, Climate and Energy Lies, available on Amazon, more in depth. But as you add more and more part-time energy, you use your full-time energy more part-time. And your costs just go up and up and up. And that's one of those that's one of the energy lies they've been telling us. Mm-hmm. They still do.
Yes.
Well, we're going to raise your rates, but sometime in the distant future, they'll come down again. Well, that's just a flat out lie. When you buy a second car, your car costs go up. When you have a full-time operating grid, like you have a full-time gas car that works just fine for you, if you buy an electric car, your cost just went up. And the same thing happens with our electric grid. We already have barely enough power in many places to power the electric grid we have now. But then we're adding more to it, and the transmission wires they need to move that electricity around from the countrysides in the middle part of the country where the wind is better, everywhere else, literally cost trillions of dollars.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. we're talking about electric rates that are going to quintuple over the next few years.
Wow. And, you know, it's not just the utility bills that you're paying. It's also all of those tax dollars that are helping fund all of this.
That's another aspect of this that really is overlooked a lot. But Kamala Harris provided the tie-breaking vote in the U.S. Senate because they were split 50-50. So no Republicans voted for it. But the Orwellian named Inflation Reduction Act, which really should have been named the Inflation Increasement Act.
Yes. Induction.
And they lied to us with that, saying, oh, it's a $369 billion bill, a third of a trillion. And in fact, it's more than a trillion, if not more than a couple trillion dollars in actual costs. And all of that is borrowed money, adding mm-hmm. to our national deficit of $35 trillion, adding to our $1 trillion a year interest payments now on that debt. And then it's worse than that. So we're taking borrowed money to make our electric rates higher, to make our electric grid more unstable, because you can't run full-time electricity on part-time power. I mean, do we turn out the lights when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining, which is the most of the time? No, we don't want that. So we have to have the full-time energy too. And then to add this, we're adding to our inflation-causing national debt. We're adding to inflation on our electric grids by adding these things. And then we're buying 80% of them from the Chinese, who are using them to grow their economy and grow their military. So we're making our rival or enemy, the totalitarian regime of China stronger while we're getting weaker.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a lot of questions to ask you, so I think we'll take a break a little bit early. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Frank Lissay. We're talking about energy and energy policy and how that's going to impact you in the next administration. And welcome back. We are talking with Frank Lissay. He is a senior policy advisor for CFACT and the president of Truth in Energy and Climate. His website that you really should visit is truthinenergyandclimate.com. And to make that easy on you, in case you didn't catch that, head to our website, ispyradio.com, and look down in the show notes section where we post our guest websites, books, articles that we talk about during the show, and other related information that you can explore. So, Frank, I thought we ought to, you know, not to get too far down into the weeds here, but I think we ought to talk a little bit about energy and the regulations and how regulations impact energy, especially its end cost to the consumer. And you are uniquely positioned on this because you were a former state senator in Wisconsin. You also then worked in the Scott Walker administration, so you're very familiar with the regulatory environment. How much government regulation of energy is truly necessary, and how much is just flat out overkill?
Well, we've certainly reached overkill today. We have all of it is heavily, heavily regulated, and you need regulations to protect the weak from the strong, protect the environment from bad actors, whether intentional or unintentional. So regulations are absolutely necessary. And we have a monopoly system of delivering electricity in most places in the United States. So people have no choice, and they have to buy their electricity from wherever. Gas is also gas and natural gas, coal, they're all highly regulated. And again, that's necessary. But this administration has really had an anti-fossil fuel, anti-coal, mm-hmm. oil, mm-hmm. and natural gas bent to them. And while we're producing more gas and oil than ever in the United States, it's all mostly, I shouldn't say all, but mostly been on private lands, and they've withdrawn from federal lands, which means when you harvest oil, and we're different in than every other country in the world, the people who own the land that the oil or the oil rights come from, they get 17.5% of the get paid 17.5% of the value of the oil on the day that it's pumped. So it's a real benefit to the local economy. It's a real benefit. The federal government, when it's done on federal lands, gets this money, multi-billions of dollars, that we have to spend. And when we're not doing it on federal land, we don't have that. It goes into the private sector, which is great for the local economy. And people need to understand a little bit, backing back into the big picture, that the scale of the amount of energy the world uses is really breathtaking and really hard to kind of get your head around. Starting with oil, we use about 37 billion barrels of oil a year, and a barrel of oil, I think, has 55 gallons of oil in it. Mm-hmm. So we're using a huge amount. The United States uses 20 million barrels of oil a day, and we harvest about 13 million within the country every year or every day, and we import 7 billion barrels of oil. Then we use 140 trillion cubic feet of natural gas annually, and the United States exports the majority of that, with Russia following. And then we use 8.5 billion tons of coal, which is equivalent to, we use more coal energy in the world than even oil. Well, the equivalent 8.5 billion tons of coal is about 41 billion barrels of oil of energy. And the communist Chinese get more than half of all their energy from oil. The Indians in India, with 1.4 billion people each, about a third of the world's population, get 75% of all their energy, not just electricity, which has to be created from something else, all their energy from coal. And both China and India are rapidly building literally hundreds of coal plants right now as we speak. And each of them, each of those coal plants will last 50 to 75 years with normal maintenance. So they're going to be around and the reason they're doing this is coal is low cost, reliable, and abundant. We have multi-thousands of years of coal in the ground around the world. More is being found all the time. It's relatively easy to harvest and use. And we use clean coal technology here in the United States, where we get half of our drywall from the solids taken out of the coal, and it's very efficient, takes out nearly all the solids. So when you see a coal plant burning and you see smoke coming out, it isn't smoke, it's water steam. Vapor yep. coming out, it's steam, because they use that heat to turn giant turbines to make electricity for all of us. And in hydroelectric, they're using those giant turbines spun by water coming down through the dam typically. So we're using a huge amount of energy. And we're going to continue to use a huge amount of energy, and we're setting records. 2022 was a record of fossil fuel production. Last year was a record of fossil fuel production. And for those who are climate crazed and believe that, CO2 emissions, which are really actually good, and we could talk about that if you want to, they have it upside down and backwards. But China is producing more real pollution and more CO2 emissions than all industrial nations combined. Mm. And then all the rest of the world, besides those 29 industrial countries, including China, the rest of the world uses even more than China. So we're not backing away or changing any of this anytime soon. But people in the United States and in the West are being buffaloed or propagandized into believing this stuff that's really driving horrendous for the West energy policy.
Yes. Well, you had mentioned that regulations are really intended to protect the weak from the strong, but unfortunately, some major corporations, due to their lobbying and due to their donations, they're able to effectively squeeze out competition. And so sometimes regulations, I think regulations end up harming the end consumer. And I think of things like coal, which you also mentioned, because it's become public enemy number one, even though there's such an abundant amount of it. And I sometimes wonder if there weren't all of those anti-coal regulations, maybe by now we would have found even better ways to burn coal or other uses for it. I mean, if we could just take the handcuffs off of industries, I think that is a better approach to energy.
It absolutely is. You're absolutely right. In your comments on kind of the corporate rent seeking and big corporations, the you know, being in bed with the government is very, very true these days. And worldwide, we have a movement for woke corporations and corporations pursuing net zero on their own, or banks trying to force businesses to lower their carbon output, their CO2 output. And by the way, calling CO2 carbon is like calling water hydrogen. It's great marketing, but it's factually incorrect. But it's hard to demonize what makes our sodas fizz and our champagne fizz and beer, you know, beer carbonation. We know what that is. Nothing to be afraid of. But when you hear carbon, you think of black. I do anyway. I think most people do. Black charcoal, black soot, bad things, dark black. But the reality is CO2 is not carbon, and we shouldn't be regulating this stuff at all. In fact, it's a benefit to the world. Worldwide crop harvests and worldwide crop yields, that's the amount you get from each acre, are up dramatically throughout the whole world. NASA has pointed out, and you can see this in my book and on our website, Truth and Energy and Climate. My book is Climate Energy Lies, available on Amazon. You can see this. We explain it. We show it. We have pictures and graphs. Of the fact that the world is a much greener place and a much healthier place because of more CO2.
Absolutely. CO2 is a nutrient, not a pollutant. Okay, it is time for a break. Our guest today is Frank Lassay, the president of Truth in Energy and Climate. Coming up, we're going to be talking about one hammer that the government has, mandates. Stay with us. We are talking with Frank Lassay. He is a senior policy advisor for CFACT and also the president of Truth in Energy and Climate. His website is simply truthinenergyandclimate.com, and we'll link that up on today's show page, which is 14-43 on iSpyRadio.com. And so I want to shift a little bit and talk about some of these mandates that the government is able to do. And you look at something like what Obama did, and he's, you know, longtime listeners of iSpy know that we've talked about Obama's market transformation. And what this really meant was that he was going to use the power of government to corrupt the free market and to bypass the normal market forces, getting around such things as startup costs by handing the right companies doing, in his mind, the right things by giving them cash and tax credits to the right companies and to also the right people. And that bypassed the need for startup, for convincing investors, not to mention consumers, that their products were good things, because they didn't have to make profits. They were given profits by the government, regardless of whether or not they ever made any money. You look at places like Solyndra that got billions of dollars and no solar panels, I think, were ever made. And so one of the big executive powers that the president, and especially being in the election, we're looking at what the powers the next president might have, is to use agencies to force mandates. And so how have mandates impacted the energy industry? And could the current green renewable energy exist without those mandates or the cash that the government hands out?
Well, first of all, wind and solar would die immediately without government subsidies. And the subsidies are really astounding. They get 30% to build wind and solar, so 30% right up front for building it, and then 30% of all the electricity they produce. To help regular people understand it, it would be as if the government would pay for 30% of you building your new home and then 30% of your mortgage. So it's incredibly expensive, and the mandates for them are in many states, many different places, to use them or give them priority. And that's just generally the concept out there. Even, you know, oh, everybody just wants it, so it should have priority. And it's very expensive, the wind and solar. And the reason is that part of it is that you have to have, if you want 24/7 reliable electricity, you have to have on-demand full-time power. And nuclear power is always on or off, so it's a great base power, but you can't vary it very much at all. So you have to meet the demand, which changes all the time, and peak demand on regular days is from 5 to 8 at night after people get home from work and start cooking and washing laundry and charging their electric cars if they have one. All those things create a bulge in the amount of electricity being used right about the time of sunset. And people don't know that wind or solar produces very little electricity the first hour and last hour of the day. So the sun setting right when demand is at a peak, and then wind is very variable. It just depends on the wind. And of course, in Oregon, where you are, when it's really rainy and cloudy, which it happens a lot, solar produces very little. So you have to have full-time power other sources. So we have to pay for those regardless. And the real biggest cost of a natural gas or coal plant is building it. And then you have to pay for that over typically 30 or 40 years. So you're paying for that capital cost. You're paying for the people who work there. You're paying for the fuel costs. All of that's going on all the time. And in fact, they're often being run in spinning reserve. Now in Southern California, in the winter, they have too much solar because it's very sunny, but the temperature's mild, so people aren't using air conditioning. So they have to turn off all other power. But you can't turn off a coal plant or a natural gas plant. You have them keep running in spinning reserve. So it's like leaving your car idling. And that's another way I help regular people understand this and why your electric bill keeps going up and up and up, and it will. It's if you own a gas car, you own most of us do, and you have one, and some charlatan convinces you to buy an electric car that has solar panels on it, and it only runs when the sun is shining well, and you don't put gas in it, so what a great deal, and the government pays for 30% of it, and will pay you 30% of the miles you drive on it, so you're getting huge government subsidies. So now you buy a solar car that works like a solar panels. And then you find out you really can't take it to work because it might be raining a lot in Oregon when you get done with work, or it might get dark in the winter. So now you're paying for two cars. Your car cost just went up.
Yep.
That's what's happening to our electric grid. Then you add a third car, a wind-powered car. Same deal. Well, geez, it'll be great. But then you find out you can't take it to the kids' soccer game because it might stop blowing in the evening. So now and then to make this analogy further, you have to leave your gas car idling all the time because somebody has to jump in it and rescue the people that get stuck because the solar car or the wind car stops working. This is what's going on with our electric grid. It really is crazy. It's really very expensive, and it really doesn't reduce CO2 very much at all.
Yeah.
And then the other big issue with wind and solar is that they wear out after 20 to 25 years, unlike a natural gas, coal, or nuclear power plant that lasts 50 to 75 years or even longer with good maintenance. So then you have to rebuild the whole wind and solar network every 20 to 25 years, and we'll buy all that from China again with money we don't have. Mm. It really is horrendous energy policy for all of us. And the other thing we didn't talk about, we talked a little bit at the beginning of the program about inflation. And you talked about how energy is built into and used by everything that we do. So food that we get uses a lot of energy because you have to use energy to plant it, to harvest it, to process it, to cool it, to package it, to deliver it, and then to keep it cool in the grocery stores and then have it at our house and in our refrigerator. All of that takes a whole lot of energy. And when every step along the way costs more, the food costs more. They're also regulating food for the climate. They're attacking methane and yes. nitrous oxide, yep. which is natural gas made fertilizers that helps feed about 50% of the world. Without it, half the people of the world would starve to death. And they're attacking that too. And there's zero scientific reason whatsoever to attack and try to limit methane and natural gas and nitrous oxide.
No. You had mentioned food being expensive, and if Kamala gets in, you haven't seen anything yet when it comes to the expense of your food. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Everyone stay with us. We'll continue our discussion with Frank Lassay. He is president of Truth in Climate and Energy. Stay with us. We are closing in on the election, and the economy is the number one issue for most people, and a big part of the economy is energy. And we've been talking with Frank Lassay today about that. He's an expert on energy and environmental issues. He's a CFAC policy advisor and the president of Truth in Energy and Climate. And Frank, we finished that last segment, and we've been talking about mandates, and everybody knows about electric vehicle mandates, but there's a new push as well that they're trying to electrify the truck industry. And this is going to be, I think, a disaster because everything comes on a truck, basically. I mean, if you buy something, it's arrived on a truck. And so this notion that they're going to push trucks into being zero emissions and all electric and everything else, it's just going to add no end of amount expense to people's pretty much everything they buy, and especially food bills.
Oh, you're absolutely correct. And the technology isn't there, and they need really huge batteries Which then means they can't carry as much of a load, and they have limited mileage as well with that H battery. So then they have to stop someplace and charge their batteries. And then when you have a bunch of charging stations in the same place, they can draw too much electricity from the electric grid, mm-hmm. and you can't put them in a small town. And that's another big problem. I did an article on electric buses recently in the boondoggle that they are, and they're, you know, similar to trucks, but trucks have to carry a really heavy load. And in Fairfax, Virginia, their bus drivers' experience with electric car or electric buses is that they can't charge them all at the same time, and they have to go back in and charge them after their morning run, unlike a gas car that has, or a gas bus that has enough mileage to spend the whole day out in the field. They have to come back in after their first run in the morning and charge again, but they have to wait in line to charge because they simply can't charge them all at the same time. So you're adding that problem to the electric grid as well, as just supplying them with the electricity that they will need. We're already behind on the amount of electricity that we have, and we have AI data centers drawing a lot more power, and they want to build hundreds of those over the next decade here in the United States. And each one of those AI data centers will take about the entire output of a coal or natural gas plant or a nuclear power plant. So it's really interesting, but you're absolutely correct. And again, electric buses cost four times more than a regular bus. So you could buy four times as many regular buses over an electric. And the same thing with a electric, replacing a diesel truck with an electric truck, they cost four times more. And it's going to drive up the cost dramatically.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here in Oregon, we're fighting something kind of new. It's called carbon credits, and they're trying to push this through through the climate protection plan. But it turns out that Oregon has been selling carbon credits for a while now, I think 10 years, if I remember right. But there's another aspect, too, that I wasn't aware of. There's a really interesting article from the Daily Signal, and they're talking about these mandates that and it's not just states saying, well, we want zero emissions and we want to have an all-electric fleet and no more new gasoline-powered cars by 2030 or 2040, depending on whichever state. But I was not aware that there's mandates on the industry itself that they have to sell so many of these. And as the Daily Signal points out, as these standards ramp up, the only way automakers can comply with that is to make and sell more plug-in battery vehicles or to buy regulatory credits from competitors that do. So you've got carbon credits, but these are regulatory credits. Do you know anything about these?
Yeah, in the area of cars particularly, Tesla gets billions of dollars, several billion a year in these transfer payments from gas cars. So each electric vehicle, there's a great study out by the Texas Public Policy Foundation, TPPF, on the real costs and the transfer costs of the regulations. And each electric vehicle is subsidized first with the $7,500 direct cash payment from the government. But their total subsidies are about $50,000 an electric vehicle from these transfer payments. So we all are already paying thousands of dollars more for every gas car that we buy. And as transfer payments, and as these EV mandates, if they continue, and Kamala Harris will continue them, as they continue, and Trump has said he'll roll them back to more reasonable levels, that we're paying more for new gas cars, we're paying more for used gas cars because new ones cost more, and they're subsidizing EVs. But if we change the equation and we're selling the majority of EVs, we'll no longer have the gas cars to subsidize them. So the EVs costs will go up even more dramatically. And then couple that with the Chinese, who can make them so much cheaper than we can, because they use coal energy that's cheap, because they have a million people in slave labor camps working for them, and they have lower wages, and they have very little environmental protection. So they dump the acids and the chemicals in the waste from processing lithium and cobalt and these other things directly into the ground and into their rivers. Here we have to pay to clean them all up and do it responsibly and good for the environment. So we have a lot more cost built in. So we're going to have very cheap Chinese EVs flooding the market, even with high tariffs, they'll still be competitive. And then we have these transfer payments that'll go away as we get more and more electric cars. So they're ultimately working, and this is the far away, the globalist scheme, is to make it too expensive for most regular Americans and poor Americans to own cars. That's ultimately what they want to do. And it's there. You know, you say, well, Frank, you're kind of making that up. There's an organization called C40 Cities. It's part of the World Economic Forum, the WEF, and the UN. They're associated with both. And mayors of 17 American cities, there's no vote of the city council to join, have signed up. There are about 100 cities around the world that are part of C40 Cities. C40 Cities, when they got called out on it and exposed, they said, oh, these aren't goals, these are aspirations. But their aspirations for their city, their city citizens in their cities, is that they want to make them largely vegan. Don't eat any meat. If you could be vegan, that'd be even better. They want to reduce car ownership by 95%. So only the top 5%, you know, their friends and people who are wealthy would own them. They want to limit clothes purchases to 3 outfits a year. Now, a lot of men might like that, but I think a lot of women won't be happy with that. And then they also want to limit plane flights to just 1 plane flight every 4 years for people. These are their climate goals.
Well,
this is what these people are about.
The plane limits are probably only for people that aren't flying back and forth to climate conferences, I imagine.
Well, yeah, you probably could get a free pass to go to a climate conference. I mean, 100,000 people went to Oman last year or to the Middle East last year. 100,000 people for a climate conference in the desert with 100-degree weather, where everything that they ate, consume, and got there was flown in and thank you to fossil fuels. I mean, so they go on other people's money to go do all this stuff, meanwhile telling us that all those things that they're doing are bad.
Yep. Well, energy affects everybody. Who do you want in charge of energy? That's coming up in this year's election. And we'll continue that discussion with Frank Lassay. He is the president of Truth in Climate and Energy. Stay with us. CFAC policy advisor Frank Lassay is an expert on energy and environmental issues. In addition to his work for CFAC, he is the president of Truth in Energy and Climate. His articles have appeared in the Washington Examiner, Washington Post, Real Clear Energy, and Town Hall, among others. And he has his own book just out in July, Climate and Energy Lies, Expensive, Dangerous, and Destructive. And so before we get back to our discussion, tell us a little bit more about your book. Your publisher called it the most important book every global citizen should read, and possibly the most important book I've ever published in my 22-year career. That is high praise.
Yes, I spent a lot of time putting this book together. It has a lot of graphs, charts, and sources. I mean, literally hundreds of them. To help people understand the really important issues and to make the complex, on purpose, disinformation that we're getting and propaganda that we're getting and exposing that to show us first the climate lies, because, you know, we just had hurricanes. You know, they're claiming unprecedented, more powerful, more often. Well, the facts just don't support that. The 1940s were the most active decade in this century. For hurricanes, where we had 24 landfalling hurricanes and 10 Category 5, the most powerful hurricanes, land in the United States, 10 in a decade. And we just went through a period of time from 2004 to 2016 where we had 0 landfalling hurricanes at all in the United States. But yet they're going to tell us that they're worse than ever. And those, it's virtually across the landscape of the climate reporting that's going on. And in fact, they've gotten tens of millions of dollars, including the public radio and public news systems, have gotten tens of millions of dollars of so-called donations or payments to propaganda us on climate change. They're in climate reporting. They've come from the green industrial machine, the wind and solar industry, from China, who gives money to many of our hundreds of millions of dollars to many of our very well-funded non-government organizations. Mm-hmm. And they've paid the media to propagandize us first on climate. And that's covered in the book. The facts are that, you know, gently warming out of the Little Ice Age, another part of that marketing. We're a couple degrees warmer than the Little Ice Age that ended about 1850, is generally accepted. And harder to sell us that a few degrees warmer than the Little Ice Age doesn't sound nearly as good as a few degrees warmer than the pre-industrial times. It sound romantic, but life was very hard and very short for 95% of humanity pre-industrial times. But yet we're supposed to romanticize that and want to go back.
Yeah.
That's one part of it. The other part is talking about the energy lies and what we've talked about with wind and solar. But green hydrogen is another huge boondoggle we're wasting $9 billion on. Because it's not economically feasible. To make green hydrogen is really expensive, and it takes 40% of the electricity or the energy you produce to make the hydrogen. So it's, and we don't have any infrastructure to contain and move and use green hydrogen. And hydrogen is very volatile, and it explodes. Remember the Hindenburg. Hindenburg, I should say, that blew up, that ended, giant helium-filled air balloons for transportation. So we're going down a path of a lot of climate and energy lies, and there are a lot of unstated lies as well, that somehow if we took CO2 out of the atmosphere, we wouldn't have weather anymore.
We wouldn't have people either,
get a lot
or plants.
Of rain in Oregon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, we wouldn't have hurricanes anymore. Of course we will. We've always had hurricanes, and we always will, no matter what we do. So there's a lot of these sort of things that I unpack and also get into the reasons for this. This was started 50 years ago by the Club of Rome, the World Economic Forum, WEF, and the UN is using it, because if you have a global problem like climate change, well, then you need a global solution. And who better to be the global arbiter and force all of us to do the things they say we need to do than the UN,
yeah.
Which then increases their power. Yeah. The World Economic Forum is working the climate angle with large multinational corporations, because they can comply, they can build the higher cost in more easily than their smaller competitors. So they get a big competitive advantage by doing this, but they're all finding out it's wildly expensive, doesn't make economic sense. And, you know, green investments are bad investments because, they're subsidized, and even then they can't make a profit.
Yeah. Well, so much of all of this, whether you're talking mandates or regulations and this transformation and all the rest, it's so completely driven by this religion of global warming. And people have been completely duped on this. And it seems to me we really have to, as part of, you know, you can't just pull out regulations and stuff, because you'll have people that say, well, if you pull these out, you're going to kill the earth. So we have to change the culture and the mindset on this. How do we start overcoming this?
Well, we're doing it here right now. And the reason that, you know, the left and Harris has said it, Waltz has said it, John Kerry has said it, Hillary Clinton has said it, others, U.S. senators have said it, that they need to censor all of us. They need to shut down and control the information that we have. And one of the big reasons is in the climate issue, I've seen very reliable polling that says that when people are exposed to what we're talking about now, or even tidbits of it, that, hey, you know, it was warmer back in the medieval warm period when the Vikings lived in and grew barley and had milk cows in Greenland, and it's far too cold for that now, or that we found their bodies with tree roots growing through them in the permafrost. So it was warmer before the permafrost, or that when we find out a simple fact like, they discovered recently a Roman fort built in the Alps that's been under 2,000 years of ice. So it was warmer when they built that high mountain fort in a place that was used a lot, so it demanded a fort, and then it was covered for 2,000 years with ice that's now melting. Of course, the story is, oh my goodness, the glacier's melting.
Right.
Well, the fact is that it was warmer when the Romans built their fort underneath it.
Exactly.
And when people hear these kind of facts, then they go, oh, well, the warmest ever, that doesn't seem true. Maybe. And the other part of it is, and this is what's going on in Europe, who are about 10 to 20 years ahead of us on this global warming scam, because it is a scam in wind and solar, is that people are starting to rebel on this because they simply can't afford it. They're tired of their electric bills going up and up and up and up, and everything that they buy going up and up. And now it's affecting Germany's economy and others. They're starting to deindustrialize, because any big company that uses a lot of electricity says, you know what, we can cut our electricity costs by a third if we move to the United States. We can cut it even more if we move to a different country. And they're starting to go, well, we can't be economically competitive here. So people are losing their jobs. So they're starting to turn on this, and the politicians there, as well as the immigration that we have a huge problem with, that Kamala has led the importation of 11 million that we know of illegals into this country, but they're rebelling on that. So I think as people, and the way I know people's minds work, and having been in politics for a long time, is number one, they're being told wind and solar is cheaper, as you thought, and others did, because it's free once it's installed. It's not. So they've been told it's going to be cheaper, but my electric bill keeps going up by 10 or 20% a year.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with this. And then they start to question all of it. So that's why they need to censor us, because they don't want any of this information to get out.
Exactly right.
And it's a long slog. We just have to keep giving people, and it's different, each different person will respond differently. Some people will get it when I talk about the Roman fort under 2,000 years of ice. Others will go, yeah, whatever. But they, when they hear, it affects different things, affect different people different ways. But once they start to see the light, they go, well, this stuff is kind of crazy and it's expensive. I don't want to pay for it. And polling is very clear on that, on climate polling. When they ask, should the government, should we do something about climate? Well, yeah, of course, it's the standard answer. We're propagating into it. But then when they ask, do you want to pay for it? 80% don't even want to pay $20 a month.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
And they'd be surprised to know they're already paying thousands.
Yes, exactly right. Okay, it's time for a break. Who do you want in charge of something everybody depends on? The guy that's accused of being Hitler, or the people who are actually acting like Hitler? We'll deal with that next. Stay with us. And welcome back. In our final segment now, we're talking today with Frank Lissay. He is an expert on energy and climate and environmental issues. He's a CFAC policy advisor and the president of Truth in Energy and Climate. You can visit his website at truthinenergyandclimate.com, and we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well on today's show page, which is 14-43. And so I mentioned going out of that last segment there, who do you want in charge of something that everybody depends on? And that's energy. Do you want the guy that's accused of being Hitler, or the people who are actually acting like Hitler? And I mention that because just this week it's come out that in California, the Democrats there are actually trying to act like Hitler and seize control of the means of production here, just like not just Hitler, but all of the other socialists like him. And they have recently passed a law to force refineries in California to stockpile fuel. And if they do not, they can be fined up to $1 million per day. And the stated goal of all of this is to avoid spikes in prices because, for whatever reasons, the supply and demand goes up and down. I mean, these are normal market forces. And so they're trying to stabilize this by having this these reserves at the refineries. But there was also this other thing. A California state presentation was published on X where the long-term goal is for California to take over the refineries and run them itself. What could possibly go wrong?
A lot can go wrong. And California has already just shot themselves in the foot. They've done so many crazy things with energy. But California is rich in oil, and they could produce all of their own oil themselves, and they could refine it all within their state. But they've chosen to, through regulations and various policies and tamping down on it and being hostile to oil harvesting, that they import 50% of their oil from overseas. So they're getting dirtier oil because we have the cleanest extractions in the world for oil, coal, and natural gas, because we care about the environment and we can afford to do it. And they import 30% of their electricity. So I don't know what they'll do if Oregon closes down a few hydroelectric dams. Also crazy thoughts. And they want to ultimately take over and run all of this. Why? Because the private sector says, you know what, you've put so many regulations on us. You're now forcing us to stockpile fuels, and we have to pay for that. And it limits our ability to be profitable when there are spikes in supply or lower demand. They're seeing them pull out of California because of the crazy regulations. And this is going on. We could do so much better in harvest. And Trump is onto something. He said, I'll unleash the American people, the American energy markets. And as energy prices will come down, the price of everything will come down.
Yes.
Because we have energy inflation built into everything. The same thing with the CO2 tax or trading credits or the things that they're trying to do in Oregon. That's going to make the price of everything go up. Everything mm-hmm. go up. And then their idea, I think, is as well, we'll do that, and then we'll make transfer payments to poor people. Of course, the middle class will be screwed, and the wealthy people can just buy carbon credits and do whatever the heck they want because they can afford it. So yes. The rich will continue on their merry way. Poor people will be subsidized and even more dependent on the government, and regular middle class people will be squeezed into, you know, into oblivion.
Yeah, and it just reminds me too about these regulatory credits that the gas powered companies are, the gas powered car makers are having to pay these regulatory credits to the electric vehicle companies, like some sort of medieval indulgences. So people that aren't even buying electric vehicles are still paying for electric vehicles, not just with their taxes, but these credits that those car companies have to pay for the EVs. I mean, it's just astonishing. As far as taking over the refineries, this is from a draft transportation fuels assessment. And on table 19, it outlines this, where the state of California would purchase and own refineries in the state to manage the supply and price of gasoline. And under the pros, they say this, the state would operate a market independent source of production, which would eliminate potential market manipulation and price spikes, except, of course, by being in the business itself and profit not being a motive for the state, they could manipulate the market by undercutting the going price and forcing competitors to lower prices to match theirs. And because the government has massive funding, it doesn't care if it loses money. You could just recklessly plow ahead and undermine the market.
Well, they think they can, and it hasn't worked well in other countries where they've tried this. Venezuela is just totally struggling because of their stupid policies and their government control of every big thing. And in California, another great example of that is Hawaii, an island nation, decided that the legislature there decided that gas prices were too expensive. So they put laws in place that said you can't sell gas for more than X amount. And what happened was, is the law just got ignored because the gas providers for people said, we won't sell gas at a loss. So either you have gas at higher prices than the mandate from the government, or we just won't sell gas here anymore.
Yes.
And that's more likely the reality is when you have the government controlling that much of the production in California. And if they try to manipulate the prices or try to force competitors to sell it cheaper, they'll sell it someplace else and they won't sell it in California. The prices will rise because it'll be short.
Yeah, it's just insane. The more you get government involved, the worse things get. But I agree with you what you said earlier, that I think this green energy might be starting to crumble under its own weight. And if Trump gets into office, I think we'll see that happen. And also then prices will come tumbling down. And I think we all want that. Frank Lissay, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, you're very welcome. Get my book, Climate and Energy Lies, on Amazon. Visit our website. Sign up for our e-newsletter on energy and climate issues.
Great. Thank you so much. Things are looking good right now with a lot of polls indicating a potential Trump win. You've got two major left-wing newspapers, the Los Angeles Times and now the Washington Post, refusing to endorse Kamala. I want you to ignore all of that. Keep your head down, put your blinders on, and get out there and vote and get other people to go with you. Yes, I know that some people are still concerned that the Democrats might cheat, but here's the thing. In any race, political, 100-yard dash, Indianapolis 500, the Kentucky Derby, in any race, there's always a chance somebody might cheat. You compete anyway. You don't sit out the race because somebody else might cheat. So ignore the good news, definitely ignore the bad news, and pour it on like your competitor is only a couple yards ahead and already celebrating, thinking they've won, and blow right past them. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.